Hello again, listener, and welcome to episode 31 of the Twinsies podcast. My name is Lucas Cook.
And I'm Dan Blewett.
And today, Dan, well, Dan, off the top, do you have any business to discuss? You're eating yet again more yogurt.
Yeah, today's sponsored by dairy.
The dairy industry.
Feia yogurt, and I had a cup of Fairlife chocolate milk, which is delicious, by the way, with a shot of espresso in it.
Yeah, it's like your go-to.
In a cup that has a frog in it.
So as you consume your beverage, the frog becomes more and more visible.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm into this cup.
Which you identified the frog as your spirit animal for our mural.
Yeah, yep. They're very calm creatures. They can only hop a couple times before they can't hop anymore because of the structure of their heart, which seems like a very serious design flaw.
Yeah.
But that's why they stay close to the edge of the pond.
Do you see a correlation there between them and you? Yeah.
Actually, quite an opposite. My dad has given me a great VO2 max. He was a champion distance runner, so I can go much more than three hops.
Yeah, plus you're super into flies. yeah, and so this is relevant because for those of you who've never set foot inside Warbird Academy, we have this office where we record the podcast, and there's a big window that's probably 3 feet by 5 feet, I'd say.
Like 3 feet by
six?
Six or seven. It's pretty wide.
That used to look out onto the gym, but we covered it up with a beautiful product display. And so now, as you look out the window from the office, you're just staring into the back of a slat board. So we are in the midst of commissioning one of our former, what is the alumna, right?
Yeah, that whole thing is alumna, alumnus, alumni. That's annoying to me.
Yeah. But anyway, she is going to paint us a mural. And so we decided that it's, what's the official, is that her, the official title, the one she wrote on that note, Warbird Zoo?
I mean, I guess so.
But she's going to, we have throughout the years, many kids who we've anthropomorphized as, well, I guess it'd be working in the opposite. What's the opposite of anthropomorphize? It works in the other way. But we've given them an animal in which they either behave or look like. and there's a list of seven or eight animals up there that are going to be in this mural, which is going to be pretty sweet. Which is basically, from my understanding, just going to be the gym as you would see it, but then with animals doing the things.
Yeah, so I stood out there and took a photo from like right up on the, you know, basically just capturing the same thing you would see if you looked out the window. So she's going to paint that, but paint it bustling with kids and us instructing them. So Lucas would be like a big polar bear instructing a little crocodile how to swing. That's gonna be funny.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. But yeah, that's, I don't, where'd that come from? Oh, your frog cup.
Frog cup. Yep, the old creature cup.
All right, so we have limited time for our podcast, so we decided on a yet another equipment based podcast. So today we're going to talk about shoes, whereas we've talked about bats and gloves and sort of kind of last time in our holiday buying guide, we talked about apparel. So now we're going to talk about shoes.
Yeah, and shoes are important because A, they make you cooler if you're less cool. They can make you less cool if you're more cool if you have the wrong shoes.
Yeah.
They can make you jump less high or higher, potentially.
Absence of them can give you frostbite.
Yep. They can make you a little faster or a little slower.
You
they
can cut
make
yourself your feet on
hurt.
Broken glass.
Yep. They make your feet hurt. You can fill them with orthotics.
Yep.
Or not. We can do lots of stuff with shoes.
Oh, man. As you're saying all this stuff, this could be a longer podcast than I thought it was going to be.
Well, we'll finish up when we want to finish up. And you'll have to deal with it, listener.
Yeah, you just calm down, listener. okay, so where should we begin this entry into shoes?
Let's start with construction. So, number one, there's been this trend in the last bunch of years, I believe started by the Nike Free.
The last bunch of years.
Yeah, very scientific. But the Nike Free, which was, you know, made of foam and kind of like sliced so it could move naturally with your foot, which was probably spurred from the book that I do not like, Born to Run. I read that book. I thought many of the insights by the author were just anecdotal nonsense. But anyway, the sort of like barefoot running movement spurred off the Nike Free and all these other shoes that are very minimal, okay? So yeah, minimal shoes.
The idea of barefoot running was running with traditional running shoes impedes upon your ability to move naturally as a human being. So in order for your foot and the rest of your physiological structure to function as it's supposed to, you can't have any object between your foot and the ground.
Yeah, which when you get into these, like the human body is built perfectly arguments,
right?
I just roll my eyes because it's clearly not.
Yeah, we get shot in the head and we die. So yeah. Give me that perfect.
But anyway, so construction started changing to these foam bottoms. And then suddenly, like 2 years ago especially, I'd look around the gym. We'd have 12 kids working out. And 9 of them would have shoes with no rubber on the bottom. Just foam bottoms. And they're trying to push the sled and they're just spinning in place. Like, so Wile E. Coyote would just spin in place.
Yeah, Roadrunner, as much.
And they're like, I have no traction. Like, I need to take weight off. I'm like, no, get real shoes, stupid. Like, what's wrong with your shoes? Why do you have shoes with foam bottoms? Like, you can't do anything without rubber on the bottom of your shoes.
Foam bottom shoes are essentially just glorified socks.
Yeah, because they have, it's ridiculous.
They have a foam, I mean, literally a foam sole. And then the top construction of the shoe is like a really super light, meshy canvas kind of material. So yeah. It's essentially just like wearing a sock and then like a heavy sock.
Yeah, they have no support, and they have no traction. So that was like a trend that's now finally going away because I'm seeing more and more shoes with rubber on the bottom. But you still, I feel like classic shoe construction and the way more athletically minded shoes are constructed. So, for example, basketball shoes, baseball turfs, they're not really going in that same direction. Because athletes that really need support where they're moving laterally, where they need traction off the floor, those shoes are not becoming Nike Freeze. They're not becoming foam bottoms. They're not becoming these little like booties with the like the 3D knit. You know, there's a ton of shoes we see now like this like 3D knit where it's all just like this knit fabric upper. Like the entire thing is knit. And your foot just like slides and sloshes around in those when you're changing directions. And I don't think that's what you want if you're actually doing hard training. If you're just walking around, fine.
And if you, like one of the drills we'll do on occasion here is the 5-10-5 or the pro agility. So essentially it's just testing how well you can run laterally and change direction. If you watch those kids' shoes when they go to turn the other direction, it's terrifying. They just get super rolly and you can see their foot start to turn over and it just puts them in a super compromising position.
Yeah. And, you know, for some kids, not many, that'll end up in like an ACL tear where they'll slip just enough to lose a little more balance, then their knee collapses inward, then they hurt their knee. Obviously, that's not like, I'm not saying, oh, if you have to get rid of these shoes, you're going to tear your ACL. It's definitely not what I'm saying. But for a small amount of the population, more kids will roll their ankles. I'm saying kids, but, you know, anyone wearing these shoes, more people will roll their ankles in those. More people will hurt their knees or just suffer some sort of injury because they have so little stability. I mean, ideally, a shoe just transmits all the power that you produce right into the ground and gets you moving in the other direction without having that slosh. You know, you're not sliding in your shoe or rolling over in your shoe. But so number one, I think people need to look for in shoes, and I think it just comes down to kids and parents being educated when they're looking for it, is they need to have rubber bottoms. I mean, it doesn't mean 100% rubber, but if you look at basketball shoes, they're like 100% rubber on the bottom. And when you're running around on turf, like more things are turf these days, you know, you're playing indoors, whatever, you want rubber on the bottom. And then just some more robust construction. So I'm looking at my New Balance baseball turfs right now, and New Balance is making awesome shoes right now, but they're a more rugged upper. They're like a bunch of different materials. They have a fully rubber. It's kind of like aggressive knobby on the bottom. And aggressive knobbiness, but they give you good stability, and that's kind of what you're looking for.
What is your opinion on, so I guess it was sort of what we're talking about right now would be classified as sort of a training shoe. So thing you're going to sprint in, maybe lift in, do more active type stuff. What's your opinion on low to mid to high cut?
If you have ankle problems, like I wore mids for a long time because I did roll my ankle in high school, and my ankle suffered for a while. But if you are playing basketball or you're doing court type movement, I think mids are probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to give you a little more support. You can really like buckle yourself in there and keep your ankle from moving too much. But for everyone else, I think lows are fine.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say it's highly dependent upon sort of your individual ankle. But yeah, I would agree. Like for me, when I was an athlete, I'm not anymore, but I had like not super great ankle strength. So everything I wore on the basketball court was high cut. And then I just preferred like lifting in high cut just because it offered extra stability to my ankle, which is, this is one of the things that, you know, we talk about with ankle braces. We get a lot of volleyball players who ask us, oh, you know, should I wear ankle braces to support my ankle? And it's like, this is sort of a chicken and the egg thing where it's, do you have weak ankles because you're always wearing ankle braces and they're not getting strengthened? Or do you need to wear ankle braces to protect your weak ankles? And it's like, I don't know. I think it's sort of a person-by-person basis, but I think both of our, correct me if I'm wrong, but both of our defaults would be don't use them if you don't need them. If you need them, then okay. But if you're perfectly healthy and strong, and there's no reason for you to wear an ankle brace or super high cut shoes, there's probably, I mean, don't start because then you're going to weaken what are already strong ankles.
Yeah. So we're just talking about construction. Again, if you're going to go out and buy like an athletic training shoe, don't buy one that has like that knit upper. So if you look at the shoe and it's looks like it's one piece of knit fabric, it's not the best way to go.
Which is another one of the things that always bugged me were when people were like, oh, but you know, this shoe's so light. And it's like, A, it cannot be possibly that much. I mean, your legs are super strong relative to your body. So there's no shoe that's going to be so heavy where you're like really noticing like, oh man, this shoe is really loading me down. And the lighter it is, generally speaking, the weaker the construction is going to be. So it's like, I'm not, me personally, when I look for an athletic shoe, I'm not really that worried about how heavy it is.
Yeah. And if you're playing basketball and you run up and down the court and you want to go for a shoe that's a little lighter than the next, but with similar construction, fine.
Yeah.
But if it's a training shoe, you know, I wouldn't make lightness your first criteria. If you're a sprinter, absolutely. Like, every ounce matters. You're only going in one direction. That's why they're so small. They're like slippers with spikes. But, you know, for everything else, you know, just go for construction, well-made, good traction first, and then go for comfort and lightness and trendiness, all that stuff second.
Yeah, because the other thing that we run into a lot with those Nike Free type shoe with the foam bottom is a lot of our kids will wear them to the gym and then they end up squatting and doing RDLs and stuff in them. And they don't offer a great base for that either. So they're not good for high agility, change of direction movement, and they're not great for really stable movements like a squat in relation to what your foot is doing, right? In a squat, your foot's just staying in one spot. But essentially the effect you get when you have a foam bottom shoe like that is any tiny little variations in where your weight is falling on your foot will become more pronounced with a foam bottom shoe, right? So if I have maybe just like a little bit of valgus collapse with my knee, and so now my foot shifts towards the inside of my foot, is that called your instep?
Yeah.
Then that problem becomes a whole lot worse because it's essentially like squatting on a mattress. Whereas, I mean, it's cliche now, but one of the best shoes that we advocate to our kids because they look cool and they're good for, you know, squatting and deadlifting and to a certain degree, I mean, not really, but agility movements are Chuck Taylor's, like the old school flat rubber bottom shoe with the canvas upper that you can tighten up. I mean, that's a really good shoe to squat in because A, it's super flat on the bottom, and then B, it provides pretty decent ankle support. So the Nike Frees, like across the board, aren't really good for anything.
Yeah, and so if we were kind of transitioning there, lifting shoes should be different. Now, we're not saying every parent should go out and buy your kid five different pairs of shoes for every different thing, but I had a pair of Chuck Taylors that lasted me 7 years because I only wore them for lifting.
Mm-hmm.
And at $40, it's not a bad value, $6 a year.
Right.
But, you know, they're not good for agility. I had to do our conditioning workout one morning. They told us we were lifting, and then we had to do running instead. And I was booking my ass around the track on campus, and my feet were just like slapping the pavement, and it was terrible. My arches were so sore the next day. But that's also sort of a testament to what the Chuck Taylor does, is that it has so little support on the bottom that your feet do get stronger from it. So it's kind of like the board and a run argument. So when you're squatting or deadlifting and you have weight that's pushing your body into the ground, it's helping. It's trying to compress your arches. So then your arches have to resist that, and then they get stronger. So your feet get stronger, your ankles get a little more stable. So when you're doing movements like that where you're not actively running around, changing direction, you know, you're just planted on the ground, it's good to have a little more or a little less support so that your feet are forced to adapt. You know, they have to get a little stronger, all that stuff. And then obviously transmitting more force into the ground, which may only be like, you know, help your lift a couple pounds, but you know, if you're going for a world record squat, you wouldn't want to lose a couple pounds into your shoes because your shoes have to first compress before then they're like fully compressed and then the weight can move up. Just like if you're squatting on a canoe or on a mattress, you know, you have to compress that mattress or you're going to like push into the canoe or whatever until you start to actually move the weight up. That's why you can't use as much weight if you train on unstable surfaces, which is really trendy for a long time. I think it's pretty much debunked now.
Yeah, I don't think you see that very
dumb people using it now.
Right.
So that's kind of the thing. You know, you want to have a flat, like some guys training those like weird Vibram five fingers, guys and gals. They're really weird looking. So if you want to be weird, in front of other people, you can do that.
Yeah, that's where the two forces of functionality and looking like a weirdo butt heads.
Yeah, so we don't recommend that. Be cool whenever you can. And then some people train in bare feet. Obviously, we don't do that because we're, even though we're a warehouse type grungier gym, we still don't want people with their smelly, wet feet running around.
Yeah, also that's a huge safety hazard.
Yeah, so... but, you know, Chuck Taylors or any kind of light. And there's tons of flat shoes. Like, I'll just work out on my Creative Rex sometimes. And anything that's not meant to be athletic and cushy and running shoe-y will usually be a pretty good, like, flat, pretty stable base, mm-hmm. you know. So
that reminded me of that time you were taking that 45-pound plate off the Power Runner and almost dropped it on your foot. And you said that if you didn't have a shoe on, it would have, like, crushed your toe. You
it would have destroyed my toe because it nicked just off the edge of my shoe where... the down slope of the where the leather met the like the front rubber, it like hit just on that and then fell off where that would have caught me like square in the middle of the toe.
Man,
and that was like in late April, like right before my season started. So that would have cost me a whole season. Well, not a whole season, but potentially a whole season in the sense that I would have missed 4 to 6 weeks or something with a broken toe and then just not caught on with the team because of it and then would have had to catch on in the middle of the season and, you know, get out of shape and the season's already going and all that stuff. It would have really, that was a big pro for wearing shoes at that moment.
Yeah. To summarize, hard bottom shoe, rubber.
For training.
For training.
Anytime you're changing direction, definitely go. So someone with a lot of support, upper and with a rubber on the bottom.
Yeah. For lifting, flat sole, typically, although we can talk briefly
about Olympic, because you have a pair of Olympic shoes. I don't.
Yeah, so you'll see some people using what are called Olympic weightlifting shoes, which is basically, it looks like a typical shoe, except for the heel of the shoe is raised up. I mean, it depends, but anywhere from an inch to like an inch and a half. And the idea is it's typically made out of wood or a really hard composite material, like a rubbery plastic. To offer what we're talking about, which is it's essentially like squatting on a hardwood floor, right? So you've, especially if you're lifting on an Olympic platform, which is wood, and then you have a wood heel in your shoe, then you're not losing any energy when you go to perform a clean or whatever it is. I have a pair and I used them for a while and then I kind of stopped for the only time I used them was in a front squat. So I felt like in a front squat where your heel is more likely to come up off the ground if you're not really loading your hamstrings and pushing your butt back. I felt like they offered just a more stable base. But then when I was doing things like deadlift or RDLs or even my back squat, I feel like it impeded my ability to sit back. And so I was like,
which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically with my heel up off the ground, I couldn't reach my butt back as far and it just didn't feel as good on my knees. So then I was like, oh, I'm really only using the shoe for a front squat. And then I kind of phased it out entirely. So now I just use my Chuck Taylors, and that's what I pretty much would say to anybody is I don't really know. Well, absolutely, if you're college aged or younger, I don't think Olympic shoes are worth the investment because they're expensive too. They're, you probably aren't going to find a good one for less than maybe $80 or $90. And then if you're only using them 3 hours a week, then it's like, it's probably not worth the investment. So they really only become useful, I think, if you have highly specialized training once you're older and maybe you do Olympic lifts like cleans and front squats and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's mostly for the Olympic lifts, mostly for front squats and regular barbell squats.
And I was searching really quick to see if I could find it, but when we went to listen to Matt Wenning talk, he did his master's thesis on Olympic shoes, and I feel like his conclusion was they don't really do that much for you. Do you remember that vaguely?
No, I don't remember it at
all. Okay, but I'm pretty sure, I might be misquoting him, but I'm pretty sure that he did his thesis on it, or his dissertation on it, and found out that they're really not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it can get nitpicky. So, like, when I talk about, you know, compressing your shoes and squatting on a marshmallow or canoe or mattress, like, is it the biggest deal in the world? No. But are there better shoes, you know, better tools for one job than another? Certainly, that's all.
Yeah, and I would say, especially in our realm, it's not as much about performance as it is about teaching proper movement. So like with our kids, one of our big things we're always coaching is how your knees should track when you're doing different lifts. And I think it just gets hard. Your proprioception gets thrown off a little bit and it gets hard to get a really good feel for your hips and where your knees are when you're kind of like the bottom of your foot's always moving around.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I lift in my regular shoes sometimes. I lift in all, just depends on my laziness factor.
Yeah, whatever. I don't want to sit down and change my shoes.
Not to mention not all workouts are you know, you're doing the heavy lifts like squats or deadlifts or anything like that. So
right.
a lot of your workout will be upper body or other stuff. So it doesn't really matter what you wear so much.
All right. Well, let's last thing. We kind of mentioned Chuck Taylor's as a lifting shoe. What's your go-to or your New Balance, your go-to like training shoe?
Yeah, I feel like they do a good job of being well-made with good traction. They just seem like they're more function than form than maybe compared to Nike or whatever. But obviously, they look good too, so I'm into that. But yeah, I've been on the New Balance train for a while. I feel like maybe 6-7 years ago, someone in their company was like, hey, we only make old person shoes. Everyone hates everything that we make. Let's change. So they clearly changed, and they've really tackled the baseball market. And they've, I don't know if they're a leader in the baseball market by any means, but they make really good baseball cleats, really good baseball turfs. Just they've clearly changed the direction of their company, which we used to be a very stodgy old person, you know,
yeah.
oriented company. So
and I would just offer up another one, a very similar shoe made by Nike. Is I'm looking for it now. I think it's called the Nike Lunar MVP Pregame. It's the one. If you come to Warburg Academy, you'll see me wearing it a lot. But it's the same construction idea as the New Balance. So it's got a hard rubber bottom. And then it's leather, so it has crazy good support for your foot. And the only caveat would be you have to kind of find them on sale. Typically what I would do is get last year's model, so they update it every year or two. So you can typically find them for $70-$75, whereas the new models are always like $110 or $120.
Yeah, and you know, obviously when kids are growing, they're growing out of their shoes. But when you get to mm-hmm. having a more stable size foot, I don't know when that is, like 17, 18, I'm not sure. But, you know, making an investment in a lifting shoe. And again, I only, you know, Chuck Taylor's, you can find them for $40. So if you buy a lifting shoe, it's just going to put less wear and tear on your regular, maybe like slightly nicer looking training shoes. So now, right. you know, everything just sort of lasts longer when you have more than, same thing with like a baseball glove. You know, if you have more than one glove, your gamer doesn't get as beat up because you're not using it for every single time you touch a ball. And, you know, when you start to accumulate a couple different mitts or a bunch of different pairs of shoes, they all just tend to last longer and stay presentable a little bit more. You right. know, like we have a lot of kids come in their KDs and their LeBrons and their trendy shoes for pitching lessons. And I'm like, hey, don't wear those here because you're going to drag your toe on the turf. You're going to wear a hole in it. You know, like all this stuff, just like have a pair that have your B pair. Like,
yeah. Softball you know. Pitchers are also notorious for that. The only time they come in, they're like, back foot toe area is just destroyed because they drag it on every pitch. So it's don't wear your favorite shoes when you go to do your pitching inside.
Yeah.
Well, that'll transition, I guess, pretty nicely into cleats. How do you feel about cleats? What do you look for in cleats?
I mean, they've come a long way. Historically, Nikes were the only ones that looked presentable enough to want to wear. You know, Adidas makes the lamest shoes in the world. They've been doing that for a long time. And then New Balance also made the lamest shoes in the world up until 5 years ago or 6 years ago or something.
Yeah, I don't even know who else was in the cleat market there as of 10 years ago.
Yeah, kind
of
no one.
Yeah.
And then Under Armour came on the scene and they made shoes that like did not breathe at all. So it was like wrapping your foot in a latex bag or something.
Yeah, that was...
They were just really oppressive, I felt like.
Mizuno came along as well.
They're always really dorky looking.
Always pretty dorky.
Yeah.
I don't know why. They still, their aesthetic was brutal, and it still is brutal. They haven't changed it at all.
No. They're losing a lot of traction, looks like, in the market.
Yeah. But, yeah, I remember, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that. My cleats in high school were Nikes, and they were these big, huge cleats that had zero. I mean, they were, like, all leather, so there's zero mm-hmm. breathability. And those things, anytime it rained or it was, like, muddy, they just like soaked up everything, and then they were just like these super heavy, smelly, gross cleats. So cleat market has come a long way.
Yeah, but the problem with Nikes is that even though they looked good, they were just super stiff. Like the plate on the bottom was just extra thick or extra hard rubber, I guess, but they just made your feet feel terrible.
You remember when they had the interchangeable cleats where you could go yeah. spikes mm-hmm. are molded?
Mm-hmm.
That was a terrible idea. It was broke within the first...
I never did that. It seemed cool when I wanted them, but I didn't want to spend time screwing eight cleats in each shoe.
It was such a pain in the ass. I had them, and I think I changed the cleats out like twice.
Well, and speaking of that, so, you know, I think when New Balance first came on the scene with their new less lame baseball spikes and turfs. They looked okay. They looked like decent enough, and I think a lot of guys got them. You know, like guys in the pro ball where they get a pair for free or whatever from their agent, and they're like, man, these are so much more comfortable. So comfort was, I think, and a little bit better aesthetic is what kind of helped New Balance start to take off again. And yeah, New Balance cleats are still a lot more comfortable. They're just like a little more pliable, so your foot moves a little more naturally. It's not like it's, you have like a plastic plate attached to them so much, which is what you have in the bottom. That's how the right. cleats stay in place. But historically and still now, New Balances are more comfortable than Nikes.
Yeah, and I think they just figured out
the fashion gap. It's less of an issue.
Yeah, and they figured out a way to sort of trim the fat, like you said. Because while a second ago I was making the weight issue a non-issue, on a baseball cleat it becomes, and I'm assuming, I've never put a football cleat on my foot, but I'm assuming football is the same way, where because of all the metal and all the plastic, like a cleat can get heavy really fast. Mm-hmm. Where New Balances are pretty light, and they have, for me, on the aesthetic side, they just have a really low profile. Well, I mean, literally so, where you look at the shoe from the side and it looks like a regular shoe. Whereas yeah. in the past, cleats have looked like these big boots that you put on. And so, yeah, New Balance has a really like thin upper that it still supports, but then, yeah, it's just lighter and sleeker from the side.
Yeah, but back in the day, there used to be more things to contemplate. Like, I think, well, originally, like way back, there were only 4 or 5 cleats on a cleat. And then when I was playing, there were, I think Nike had 6. And then Mizuno had like the Mizuno 9 spike. Came out. I think all of them have 9 spikes now.
Yeah.
Don't quote me that, but they have at least 8 or 9 spikes on all shoes now.
Yeah.
Like that pattern became pretty standard, I think.
Yeah, I think 5 in the front, 4 in the back is like the...
Something like that. I think
that's the pretty standard cut now.
But, you know, and then same thing, you know, like the kit for a baseball player is you have a pair of turf shoes, you have a pair of molded for pregame, and then you have a pair of metals for the game. And so metals versus molded, a lot of guys still in pro and college ball, they wear molded whenever they can. So if it's not in the game, you know, if they're just doing all their pregame stuff, because again, like in pro ball, you're out on the field from 3 to 6, you know, and doing outfield, your BP shagging, all of your stupid stuff that you do, your running, your catch, all of your pregame routine, which is really long. You try to do that in more comfy cleats and then only put your metals on when it's game time. And then some guys still play in plastics whenever they can, you know, if it's not essential.
Well, and this is probably a subject of a future podcast, but a beneficial side effect of that is it's a lot easier on the field too. Like when you're out there warming up and you're like running around the outfield a bunch, when you're wearing metal cleats, it's essentially like little scissors on your foot. So you're just like kind of churning up the ground versus when you're in your molded, it preserves the life of the grass a little longer.
Yeah, it's a little better. They're not so great, but they're better. Yeah. They want you in turfs a lot of times, the nicer fields, so you don't tear it up, but
then
you don't have any traction. But, you know, that's kind of how it works. But, again, I know for a parent, it's not cheap to buy them 3 pairs of shoes. And, you know, you just need to show up to the field in some pair of shoes or flip-flops or whatever and then do your pregame stuff. But, you know, you need running shoes to run if you have to run before or after, run poles or whatever it is. And then, you know, are molded essential? No. But they're like that middle ground where you're going to do your pregame stuff and not need your premium traction. And then, you know, metals, you should always wear them. Unless maybe you're an outfielder or sometimes an infielder. But really, you can't wear molded, I don't feel like, as a youth or an amateur player, because infields aren't soft enough to dig in with molded cleats. You need the metals to dig in. You know, you see more pro guys wear molded and still play second base in molded because the fields are taken care of where they're not rock hard. And so the molded cleats, which are way wider than the metal, they'll still dig in enough to give you track. Yeah, but... You know, like kids wear molded cleats. When we had this clay mound here at Warbird, we had it. We just got rid of it this year because we were tired of it. But, you know, even with molded cleats, it wouldn't bite into the clay because the clay is just so hard. So you had to wear metals to throw on our clay mound because it was all clay. And then like the rubber spikes that, you know, kids 12 and under usually wear that are rubber, not plastic. They had no traction whatsoever. They just could not bite into it. So it just depends. But, you know. I still think New Balance is probably doing the best in the industry right now as far as cleat comfort and style and functionality in general. I mean, that's kind of my recommendation, but...
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard not to sound like New Balance fanboys, but there's really not anybody that... I mean, Nike still does their thing. They still have decent cleats, but outside of those two... Because Under Armour, I haven't paid attention probably in 2 or 3 years, but like you said, their cleats weren't that great. They were, I think they kill it in football cleats, and I think their baseball cleats were just modifications of their football cleat, which was meh.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. I mean, go on price or whatever, but I wrote them off years ago because I tried a couple times. I got trainers that were in Under Armour for winter sprint conditioning in college, and they were just so just like clunky and hot. Like, they just didn't let my foot breathe. I was like done with Under Armour, and I just never wanted to go back.
So. Yeah, and then, you know, for Mizuno, I remember years ago when I worked for Extra Innings, I got, we had like a price deal through Mizuno. So I got Mizuno's trainer that was essentially their cleat in a trainer form. And it was super comfortable. But I just, like you said, I could not get over how it looked. Like, I just didn't like how it looked.
No. Shoes are important.
Yeah. So there you go.
I guess the last thing. Yeah. And the last thing I would say is for pitchers, you know, a lot of people put on these turf toes, which if you do drag and you do pitch on clay, pretty important. I would tear a hole, like my big toe exposed to the world after like 10 starts when I pitched in pro ball. So and I did that through college too. I mean, anytime you're on a mound that's clay, you're gonna drag and dig in pretty well. Every pitcher's drag pattern is different, but you know, if your mechanics are good, your foot's gonna stay on the ground a little bit longer. You know, obviously there's some amazing big leaguers, their back leg comes off the ground a little bit sooner, but in general, your back foot's going to stay down. It's going to drag a little bit before lifting up as your hips, you know, finish rotating. So that contact time over and over and over will wear a hole in any shoe, no matter how durable, pretty much. So, you know, you get this turf toe applicator, which is still crazy expensive. It pisses me off how the technology has not come down and how there's not some, like, Chinese company from Amazon that makes, you know, an alternative for like $6, because basically you just buy it and it's a $30 or $25 tube of glue. It's like a tube of black, you know, semi-flexible, like epoxy, and you have to scrape your shoe really well with sandpaper and really more like a Dremel tool or something to really get it scuffed up. And then you apply that on there and it sticks to it, it hardens, and then you kind of go about your business. But that can save a shoe. I mean, because again, if I didn't do that as a starter, my shoe wouldn't make it half the season. I have to get a new pair. So it was worth the investment. But depending on how hard you are on your shoes as a pitcher, maybe a good investment. Like I said, I just cannot believe that company has the market cornered on black, semi-flexible epoxy. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
It's just glue.
I would say if you have a pair of cleats that you like, it's a necessity. Because just like you said, if you don't have it on there, your cleats that would otherwise last four seasons are going to last a season and a half or two seasons. I'm a little bit out of touch. Remember, they used to have the one that like was preformed and you shoved on the front of your shoe. They still have that one?
They do. You can still buy that. It's a little bit cheaper, like $5 cheaper. And
I wouldn't recommend it. Like when I had one, it was like I was wearing a galosh on my foot. It was huge.
Well, it can still feel that way depending on how heavy you apply the turf toe, the tough toe. So if you're like a shortstop and you pitch two and you have one pair of cleats, I don't know that I'd recommend putting it on there, or just put it on really thin or like not
thin layer,
because
maybe
you can feel it sometimes if you really glob it on there. And if you have a big drag line, you might have to really cover a lot of the shoe. So it just depends, but it could definitely weigh it down or like change the mechanics of the shoe a little bit. So if you're, you know, full-time position player, I don't know, maybe think about it, maybe get a pair of junker cleats and put them on that one, or just don't. But you know, and if you have a pair of shoes, like I always say, go to TJ Maxx, go to, not Marshalls. Well, Marshalls sometimes has shoes. What's the other one? Ross? Ross has
cleats.
Yeah.
Do we have
cleats?
A Ross here? I was going to say, I don't have Gordman's anymore, but did they have shoes?
Probably. I always got pairs. You know, if we were on the road trip, guys would go and check out those, you know, discount stores and come back with a pair of $15 cleats that were brand new and legit. And then you could just beat them up and not worry about putting a turf toe on it because the cost of the shoe is less than cost of the tough toe. So anyway,
I guess the last thing we should touch on, because I know you're big on this, Dan, how do you care for your cleats? What product do you have to buy?
Oh, scrubbing bubbles, everyone. You can buy knockoff brand, but I think it's important to clean your cleats before each game or each doubleheader, whatever it is. You know, if you have cleats, they'll last a lot better just by taking care of them. So just clean them, you spray them down. You don't need scrubbing bubbles. I think a rag with a little water on it works just the same. I mean, guys like swear by scrubbing bubbles. It foams up, you spray it on your shoe, then you just either brush it down or rub it down with a rag, but or both. But
yeah, it does work well. And you know, for you know, if you do nothing to your cleats and all the dirt like gets wedged in between the like the laces or the stitching on the shoe, just like not great.
Especially with a lot of ones, and that's only my only gripe maybe about New Balance is that they put a lot of tend to put a lot of mesh on their shoes.
Yeah.
And can never get that stuff clean.
Yeah.
Unless you I don't know, you don't really want to flush your shoes out, but that's kind of the only way to get it out of there. But, you know, when you're in college or pro ball, like, you're going out in front of the fans and you're expected to look presentable. And that means clean uniform and just look right, you know, the way your uniform hangs on you and all that stuff. So having clean cleats is part of that. So guys learn it's kind of like part of the deal that you need to, your spikes need to be cleaned every game. Now, if they're not dirty, fine. You don't need to go over them. And, but, you know, for the most part, if you played, you're going to have to clean them that night. So they're respectable for the next day, especially if you have gray, which gray cleats are more common than ever, and white, which I think look brutal. Mm-hmm. But the only that looks more brutal than white cleats is dirty white cleats.
Right.
So if you have white cleats, you absolutely have to clean them. Otherwise, they just turn yellow and they look awful.
Right.
And why did you buy white cleats?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think that's an important part of your toolkit, just to have a can of scrubbing bubbles that'll last you most of the season and just make it a point. As soon as the game's over, just clean them up and
yeah,
put
it takes
away.
2 minutes.
Well, I think that's it for our shoe cast.
Shoes.
Episode 31.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
Peace.